Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze, and on today's show, I'm very excited to have Mariki Prenterman of Holland's Family Farm on the line. How are you today, Mariki?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for asking.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And for those of you who don't know Mariki the person, I'm sure many of you have tried Mariki the cheese, Mariki Gouda, which has taken home multiple national and international awards since the first batch was made in 2006. Mariki herself just won the Wisconsin Outstanding Young Farmer Award in January and was the first female to win the award. I wanted to say congratulations. That's a great accomplishment, and you are so very deserving of it. I'd love to start off by asking you how you came to be a farmer and cheesemaker in Wisconsin, if you could share with us.
Yeah, I can do that. Mostly when I start talking, people ask me, I get two questions. One question is, where are you from? And then I always say very proudly, I'm from Thorp, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I get that look, well, like that accent doesn't belong with Thorp. So then the next question is, well, I say, well, I'm from Holland. So what brought you to Holland is then mostly the second question.
Yeah.
So then I was tell them this little story between me and my husband. We met many years ago. I was doing an internship in Canada, and he and his brother were in Canada looking for a dairy farm because both brothers wanted to farm, but Holland is very small. Holland fits about five times in the state of Wisconsin.
Yes, it
and
does.
We have about 16 million people versus the 5 million in Wisconsin. So for them, it was a reason to go abroad and look for other opportunities as it was very small in Wisconsin, in Holland. So I met him in Canada, but and I thought he was cute right away.
That's great.
But he was dating somebody, and I didn't know. It was just for a month or so. But anyway, we kept in contact by email. So once in a while, we would shoot each other an email. And so then he sent me this email, and he says, Marika, we found this beautiful farm in Thorp, Wisconsin. If you want to have a cup of coffee with me, you will have to. We'll have to do that quickly because we're going to move to Wisconsin, and then we will see each other never again. So the evening before he left for Thorp, Wisconsin, I was sitting on his parents' couch drinking a cup of coffee. Nothing happened, but I thought he was still very cute. And I said to Rolf, I said, hey, would it be okay if I help you and your brother out for a day or 10 on a new farm? And I said, oh, yeah, of course, he said. So he left in May 2002. And I booked a flight for August 2002. And I thought, if he's going to come and pick me up from the airport, I will tell him right away how cute he is.
Oh, there you go.
But if the brother is going to come and pick me up, then the feeling is probably not mutual. I will do my job, and I will fly back to Holland right away.
Oh, wow.
So guess who picked me up, Craig?
I believe I can. I believe I know who picked you up. I believe that.
Well, it was the brother.
I know that. I know that. But I wanted you to say it.
So that was quite a bummer. But luckily, we had 10 days to figure it still out before I left for.
I usually have had a lot less than 10 days to figure that kind of thing out. So you had a goodly amount of time.
Yes, we did. And apparently he's not so good on the road, just like I am. That's why we have a GPS in our car. He would have never found the airport, I think. And so it all worked out anyway. So that was my beginning. It took me a year and a half before I did finally move over to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And then we have five children. We do things very quickly.
Wow.
But after the first two were born, they're twins, I was just starting to miss, I was starting with all respect, I just couldn't get used to the cheddar and Kobe yet.
Uh-huh.
And it's also, well, it was more the processed cheeses that we got in our storage here. Now I found some beautiful, wonderful, loving cheddars in Colby, but at the time I really was missing our Gouda also.
Uh-huh.
And I always asked family and friends if they could bring over cheese from Holland, and that's what they did. But due to custom restrictions, you know, you could have two suitcases and then just one, and then the weight of the suitcase became less and less.
Yeah.
So there was less and less room for us to bring our cheese along.
For wheels of Gouda to fit in your suitcase?
Yes. So we got a little supply shortage of Gouda cheese in our fridge. And then one night, I was tossing and turning because I also wanted to start my own business before I turned 30. We all have probably some milestones in our lives.
Certainly.
And one of it that I really wanted to start my own business or with my husband before I turned 30. And the clock was ticking. So I'm tossing and turning, and I hear a cow because we were living on the farm. And
uh-huh.
I heard one of the cows having a calf. And I'm like, that's it. We have the good Wisconsin milk. I want to start my own business. And we have a supply shortage of Gouda cheese. I should start trying that to make myself my own Gouda cheese. So I woke up my husband and I told him, hey, honey, I think what we should do. I know that we should do. And I said, I think we should try to make our own Gouda. And like every good husband, he says, yes, dear. That's a wonderful idea. Let's talk about that tomorrow. So he turned around and fell asleep, and my wheels were starting to spin.
Sure.
Then I came in contact with a wonderful organization called DBIC, Dairy Business Innovation Center, and they help people with a farmstead idea like we had. And so I knocked on their doors, and they were the ones that told me that I had to go and get my cheesemaker's license. So that's what I did, because I think Wisconsin is the only state on planet Earth that requires a cheesemaker's license. At that time, it was kind of a bummer, but now I see the importance of it, too, and it was very helpful to know
why do you see it to be so important?
Because especially, well, I didn't grow up in a cheese-making family. My parents are dairy farmers.
Yeah.
And, I had no idea. I had no idea how much work cheese-making was.
Yeah.
So all the regulations and the science that goes behind it, and all the different cheeses, how they all are made different, and how cultures can influence the outcome out of it, and the sanitation that comes along
sure.
with it.
When you started to make cheese and you wanted to make Gouda or Gouda because you thought there was a lack of it in Wisconsin, was it interesting to you? All of the culture and science that goes behind making the Gouda taste exactly like it does, the one that's from Holland, and yours, did you want it to taste like that or to be a representation
yes.
of that? You wanted it to taste like the stuff you had at home.
Yes. I wanted to make an authentic Dutch Gouda like we would make it in Holland. So I also came in contact with a cheese equipment company from Holland.
Yeah.
That custom made for us our first cheese vat. It was a 1,500 liter, so almost a 396 gallon cheese vat that they custom made and got shipped over from Holland. I also was able to get Dutch cultures
yeah.
into Wisconsin, so we use Dutch cultures. And we use half of our herbs are from Holland also.
Because you have some cheeses with the fenugreek in it and things like that. So you got those, you mean the herbs that you put inside of your cheese. You want it to be Dutch as well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes, a lot of stuff. We have as much as possible we tried, but we use the good Wisconsin milk.
But we
just wanted to have a different flavor to it. Well, try to get a really close to that Dutch flavor.
Yeah.
Not that we don't have good products here in Wisconsin.
No, but it's different.
I just wanted to something unique. Yeah. So,
a few weeks ago, we did a series about cheese research and development process, and we spoke with a couple of cheesemakers like about how they selected the breed of cow and taking into account their local geography and the climate, and how that eventually affected the styles of cheese they made. So, what was your process for choosing the breeds of cow you raise, or were they already chosen for you? And did that affect the cheeses that you produce? What kind of cows you use? I know you said you have that good Wisconsin milk. What kind of good Wisconsin cows do you have?
I truly believe in a good begin product. For me, well, the cows were already chosen. The first 7 years, we were at a different location. We were in a partnership with my husband's brother. And we were using then the farm's milk. There was 100% Holstein cows. We just recently switched to a better location. We're close to the highway. We have a great visibility. We also have better expansion opportunities here because we just outgrew our old location. My husband's brother continued at the old farm, so we had to look at a new farm. So with new cows, and we found a beautiful herd, and our current herd exists. One third of it is a Holstein breed, one third is a Brown Swiss, and then the other one third is a mixture between the Brown Swiss and the Holstein. We found out that the Brown Swiss do have a little bit higher fat and protein, not much more, because you can do a lot with feed, how you feed the cows.
Sure.
And these cows are all get fed, so it's a mix in herd. It's not that we only take milk from the Brown Swiss or only from the Holstein. But for some reason, the milk from we started on February 17th, 2014 was the first batch of this new herd, and the milk sets different. So when we added the rennet, it coagulated quickly. It just sets different, and the milk seems more yellower too. And I don't think that's due to the fat component, but I really think that Brown Swiss has a yellower component to the milk also.
Why is that?
I don't know why. It's maybe a different breed. Maybe the molecules in it. I don't know.
But you notice a different milk. You notice something different about it.
Yes. Yes. And we were, it tastes creamier also. So I do truly believe in different breeds that will create different milk.
Did that change your process?
Close to the old location. So the ground is about the same, but that can affect the milk a lot too.
But your process, your cheese making process, and when you noticed that you had different milk, did it affect your process? Did you have to? You said it's set differently. Did you have to adjust to the cultures that you used or the processes that you used to make the cheese in order to keep the end product consistent?
Yeah. Well, what we did is we just adjusted the rennet a little bit, so we use a little bit less rennet, but for the rest, it's still the same cultures and the same process that we do. Gouda is a water washed curd, we still have the same way of making it. But I think that the milk, the different milk, makes it a little bit more creamier.
Cool. I want one bit of anecdotal thing to say to you, then we're going to have to take a short break. But I remember when you were first introducing your cheeses in, I think, 2007 or so, and I've told the story to some friends of mine, and you were working with what was then the Cheeseworks West out at we were at the Moscone Center, and I believe you were very, very, very pregnant with one child. I don't know which child it was, but I remember working with you, and you were sampling your cheese, and it was some of the first cheese, and you looked at me, and you were like, excuse me, I have to go to the bathroom. Can you do this? And I started sampling out your cheese, and I noticed that you were gone for a while. And Steve, the owner of the Cheeseworks, said, "So where did Mariki go?" And I said, "She went to the bathroom." And then for about like 3 or 4 minutes, I was wondering if me or one of the ladies that was working at the cheese booth with us was possibly going to have to go into the bathroom at the Moscone Center to deliver a child. But then you reappeared. Do you remember that? Do you remember that?
That's a wonderful
question. I was very relieved because I liked you very much from when I met you, but I didn't know if I was going to be able to get that done for you without knowing you a little better.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did. Luckily, I did have it in Wisconsin when I was back in Wisconsin. And I just had it in a hospital. So
good stuff. I'm sure that was better for everyone involved.
Yeah. And got the specialist involved, yes.
Fantastic. Alrighty, well, we're going to have to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll continue talking with Maria K. Penterman of Holland's Family Farm.
Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. Before the break, we were talking with Marie K. Penterman of Holland's Family Farm in Wisconsin about how she came to be a cheesemaker and about how maybe I also almost had to deliver a child for her, which is more my story than hers. As some of you listeners may know, April 18th is the first annual Raw Milk Cheese Appreciation Day. You can learn more about the festivities on the Cheese of Choice Coalition website. And we're going to be doing a special episode next week to honor the day. Mariki, you're also participating in that day, correct?
Correct, yes.
So what will you be doing on that day?
We have some specials going on in the store. We just talked about this morning, too, how we would like to get the word out a little bit more. So we're going to contact our local vendors, see if they want to help us spread the word. And, yeah, so we'll do social media and running specials. So we hope to spread the word because we are a true believer in the raw milk. I believe because all our cheeses are raw milk, so we hold them at least for 60 days. And I think this is a wonderful way to put some more positive light, shine some positive light on raw milk products.
Yeah, so how important, I mean, you make amazing raw milk cheese. How important to you in the beginning was it to make a raw milk cheese?
I think with pasteurization, we kill the bad bacteria, but we also take the good bacteria away. That does affect our immune system. I think it's better for our immune system, to boost our immune system, but there are a lot of healthy things going on. With pasteurization, you damage also the molecules, and I think if you don't do that, the molecule is whole, and your body digests it so much better.
Sure.
We have people working in our store that actually their cholesterol went down after starting working at our place. So, again, I think our body digests it so much better. We're getting so, our immune system getting so fragile sometimes, you know. I know there's a lot of people that have their concerns about raw milk, but I think if you have a good begin product, that is, then it's safe, you know, to use it. If you're not used to it, you have to slowly introduce that back into your daily diet. So it's not like, well, and if you don't want to do it, it's fine too. But I still believe there are safe products. Again, a good begin product, and that's why with us, we milk our own cows, and then we milk them five o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and 9 o'clock in the evening. We use the milk straight from the cow, so 5 o'clock when the cows get milked, that milk goes straight into our cheese fat, and then we make it within 5 hours into cheese. That milk is still so warm from the cow's body temperature when it comes in our, in our cheese fat, so it's very fresh.
I agree. What you said just before is important. I just feel, just as a human being, that we seem to be pulling away from things that are simple, and food seems to be becoming a lot less simple in our world. But cheese is so simple and wonderful, and why anyone would legislate against the beautiful product that is raw milk, when there are people like you that take such care to turn it into wonderful cheese is beyond me. And that's one reason, because I love it and it tastes better to me. But two, it is better for you, and it's important for what you said about pasteurization and what it does to the milk. I'm not a dairy scientist. I'm a decent cheesemonger, but not a good scientist. But I do know a little bit about the pasteurization product. And if you take away the milk or anything's ability to defend itself against pathogens, that's not good, including ours. So those people who you feed all that nice raw milk to in your store are getting healthier because their immune system is being, is being forced to do its job, which is good. That's why, that's why it gave it to us. I feel like a lot of the gout in Holland isn't raw anymore either, right?
Correct. You're right. Yeah, I totally agree. It used to be that if you were not making a raw milk product from your own, well, as a farmstead creamery, if you didn't use, if you would pasteurize your milk, you had to call it like a commodity cheese,
right?
You had to have it do it raw milk, otherwise you were not entitled to call it a farmstead cheese, even though you made it on your own farm. But that's how supportive they were. But it does seem like they are pasteurizing more and more, and that's a little bit sad to see, I think. But so I think this is a great way trying to promote the raw milk cheeses again and raw milk products. And I fully support that. What did I want to say? We do at our end is that we have 60 days, and in those 60 days we cannot sell it anyway. So this is totally voluntarily, but we cut a piece out of every batch that we make. So not every wheel, but every batch that we make, and we send it into the laboratorium to test for Salmonella, Listeria, E. coli, and Staph aureus, just to make sure that when it leaves, it's really safe. So because we don't want to get anybody sick either, that would hurt us as a company. And
of course,
anybody that deals with raw milk, they have the best intention to provide the customer a very safe product.
That's another and that's another reason and why and there have been issues that I've been hearing about why it might be important to be certified as a cheesemaker if you're going to work with a product like that, like raw milk.
Yeah.
You need to know how to handle it, and you need to know that to test for those things, that that the milk is so alive that those cultures might be alive in it, no matter how safe you are and clean you are, it's still good to send in the check, because that keeps the little thing that you're trying to support, which is raw milk cheese, alive and well.
Yeah, because if we would do something bad, it doesn't even give, it's not only giving us a bad name, but it gives the whole industry a bad name. And that's why people are often reluctant to, even though it's maybe just 5% of what represents the whole industry. That 5% is giving such a negative effect that it seems like there's a lot of bad stuff. But in reality, well, there are a lot of safe raw milk products.
Absolutely.
I totally believe. Yes.
So. Got to keep doing the good work. So last week, Diane Stemple, who does all the book reviews, she interviewed the Heritage Radio Network's founder, Patrick Martins, about his book, The Carnivore's Manifesto, which is about eating meat, obviously. But it brings up important issues that are relevant to being a dairy farmer, and that's part of what you just told me. I would love it if you could just talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on animal welfare issues and whether, happy cows really do make better cheese.
Yes, I would love to. I love our cows. I think cows are my first passion. I always say when people come into our barn, and I love the fact that we have that great opportunity that when we moved to this new location, we really had in mind that we would love to show people what we do on our farm, and how cow comfort is our number one concern.
Cow comfort.
Cow comfort,
I like
yeah.
it.
because good cows produce well, cows that are feeling comfortable and they produce a good product, and that's what we need to make into a wonderful cheese product. So when people come to our farm, they will see that we even have rotating cow brushes.
Yeah,
what they do is, as soon as the cow touches them, the cow brush starts to rotate them, and you will see cows, they will do a whole scratching, massaging thing.
Man, I need a cow comfort brush massage right now.
Yes. Sometimes I get a comment from the first lady that ever commented on it was, oh, I need one for my husband so I don't have to scratch his back all the time. So
that's great.
Yeah. And if you look at those cows, they so enjoy it. It makes them feel comfortable, and they will produce better. We have a sprinkle system. Sprinkle system means that in very warm days, there's some sprinkles of water coming to cool the cow off. Then we have a ventilator that blows the air around. Our cows are mainly inside, and the reason for that is that in Wisconsin, there are not many days suitable for a cow to be outside. I love to see a cow outside, but the reality is that if there is not enough shade and there is not water close by for the cow, that the cow is better off in our barn where there is shade, where we have the ventilators to cool them off, where they have water very close by to drink and they don't have to walk a mile to get the water. Feed is very close by. And our barn is a freestyle barn, so that means that a cow walks freely around in her pen and has access to water, and we have sand bedding, so that's as close as possible you can get to nature, where the cows can lay down whenever they want, and they're very comfortable. When people walk through our barn, it's very cool, because the reality is also when we ask them to produce a high quality of milk, and when a cow does that, it's just like us running a marathon, and then we produce all this heat around us, and that's for the cow the same. And in order for a cow to feel comfortable, we have to get rid of that heat around her.
Sure.
So that's where the ventilators comes in and the sprinkle system. So wintertime, cows love wintertime because it keeps them cool and it makes them well when they run that engine. It cools that engine off. So it's mostly the farmer that is cold and not the cow.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. So now is all of Wisconsin better for that? Because I seem to recall when I went to visit at Andy Hatch's farm in Uplands Dairy that a lot of his cows were outdoors. And when I talked to him about making cheese, he didn't mention to me anything about that. Is it all of Wisconsin that you think is tough for the cows to be outside all the time?
Well, I don't know. I've never been to Andy, and I'm sure he has the best interest for his cows also. I do know that our pastures don't have enough trees to give them enough shade to be comfortable outside. And again, everybody has a different way of farming.
Absolutely.
And this way of farming is the more suitable for us. People come and cuddle with our cows. We have very cuddly cows. This morning, my son came in, my son of 5 years old, Finn. Uh-huh. He came in and said, Mom, I gave my head to the cow. The cow was cold. So that's how cuddly our cows are.
Oh, my.
And they sent me a picture. Our herd manager sent me a picture, Craig, and he showed how Finn put a head on the cow. So the cow is running around right now in the barn with a head from my son, Finn.
I'd like to move out of my apartment in Astoria and just get 30 days rehab with, like, the massager and the cool barn. And I don't think I can give you any milk, but I can at least wander around on all fours out there.
Yeah. So,
wow. So
yeah,
animal welfare is obviously really
important.
We love our
cows. That's great. And we want to show people that too. So.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, your cheese is amazing. I have time. I wanted to ask you one more question. Would you ever consider making anything other than your Gouda? Are you looking at any other cheeses you're going to make for us?
Well, I love the fact that milk is so diverse, so I would love to make some time in the future. First, I want to still concentrate on the Gouda, but I would love to showcase people what we all can do with milk. We make butter, we make yogurt, we make ice cream, fluid milk, chocolate milk, cheeses, all kinds of varieties. Well, I think that's so wonderful. Milk is such an incredible product that we can make so many different things of it. So if I ever get the opportunity, I would love to make more products and show people what you all can do with it. So we make our home, we have homemade yogurt that we eat at home, and I think it's a wonderful yogurt, so I would love someday maybe to make it. But for now, we'll still concentrate on the Marika Gouda.
Yeah, I mean, and your demand has gone up too, I'm sure. I mean, you had to switch farms once, and you have said you give yourself growth for more. So it's not like you don't have enough, you know. It's not like you have not a want for the cheese that you're making, you know. And I mean, it's hard. Mm-hmm. You guys, it's hard to even get the older cheese for those of us who live far away from you. You know, we beg the people who have it, but we're very happy when we do get it. Well, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure talking to you today, and it's always nice to talk to you, Mariki. For all of you out there, I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
No, I want to thank you too, Greg, for supporting our product. It's because of our customers that we were able to grow the way we do, and we hope to welcome a lot of people at our new location and that people will look for us. So
we're
very grateful for all the support that we get.
Now you make the good stuff. So for all of you out there, be sure to check out our Instagram, Cutting the Curd, for a behind-the-scenes look at Cutting the Curd. And be sure to tune in next week for a special episode with Brad Jones of the Cheese of Choice Coalition and Jeannie Carpenter of the Cheese Underground blog. Bye, Marika. Take care, people. Bye-bye.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.